What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Unfiltered Waters. Today, Misty and I chat with the incredible Claire Curzon. Claire is fresh off a record-breaking performance at the World Championships in Doha just a couple weeks ago, where she won 6 medals, 4 of them gold, and clinched a backstroke sweep from 50, 100 to 200, which is only makes her the third person to ever accomplish this in the history of the sport. Claire shares her hot take on her performances, and then we take a trip down memory lane to now her perspective, looking back on her 2021 Tokyo Olympic Games as a 17-year-old, earning a silver medal as a part of the 4x100 medley relay. Claire shares how her sickness and missing the 2023 World Championships has shaped her and allowed her to become stronger. She shares how much she loves working with her sports psychologist and how much she looks forward to it. We discuss her transfer from Stanford to UVA and how things are going. And then Claire shares her nighttime routine, her new life as a plant mom, her favorite shows, and so much more. She even shares her latest reward system when she breaks a record at a big meet. And let me tell you, I relate to it on such a deep level. We had so much fun with this conversation. We hope you enjoy. Without further ado, Claire Curzon.
So one of the questions I get asked all the time by younger female swimmers is, how do I keep my hair healthy, especially when we're spending 2 to 4 hours a day in the chlorinated water? So some of my top tips are, always get your hair wet before you get in, rinse it immediately after every practice. I would always put my hair in Princess Leia buns. It makes it fit in your cap easier and it causes less breakage. And finally, using a product like TryHard's pre and post swim that is a chlorine specific shampoo and conditioner.
TryHard's proprietary blend actually reduces chlorine absorption as well as keeps your hair nice and healthy and hydrated. We have a special code through our Unfiltered Waters podcast. It is UWATERS for 22% off site-wide.
Go enjoy that healthy hair. We are so excited and honored to be sponsored by Little Words Project, a company whose founder and purpose means so much to us and to others. Little Words Project is a company with handcrafted bracelets with custom words or sayings that serve as wearable affirmations of our worth and everything we are capable of achieving.
Each of their products have different inspirational words on them, and the idea is to wear your word for as long as you need it and then pass it on to someone who needs it more one day. The best part is they each have a unique code on their gold tag that can be used to connect your bracelet to their website, where you can track where it goes as it travels from wrist to wrist. I have a day-by-day bracelet that I gave to Missy, and it's a huge mantra for us as we started this podcast to take it day-by-day as we keep rolling forward.
I have never taken it off. It serves as such an incredible reminder to truly take it day-by-day and to be proud of everything we've achieved up to this point and hope to continue to do so moving forward. So what are you waiting for? These make the best gift for yourself or for others. They're available online at littlewordsproject.com or in one of their 12 brick and mortar stores across the nation and in over 900 Target locations as well. Happy shopping.
Claire Curzon, welcome to Unfiltered Waters. We're so excited to have you.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah, you've been flying all over the world. We are so appreciative that you took the time to talk with us.
Oh, I'm excited. I've been watching all the clips and I'm really happy for this opportunity.
Oh, thank you, hon. Well, like Katie said, we so appreciate it because we know it has been a whirlwind for you and we are so excited. There's so much that we want to talk about and we're so thankful for you making the time. But obviously, I think the place that we have to start that we're so excited about is Worlds and Doha, which was in February. And if you are either A, living under a rock, or B, not in the swimming community, which is completely okay, that's why we're here, Claire had the meet of her life at Doha at Worlds in February. She was the female athlete of the meet. She walked away with 6 medals, 4 gold, a silver, and a bronze, and became the third person ever to sweep the 50, 100, and 200 in a single stroke at a single world. So just first off, congrats.
Thank you so much.
Incredible.
Just amazing. It was so fun watching you that whole week. So we just kind of want to relive that experience with you. How did you feel going into Worlds and maybe even your decision to swim? Because I think one thing to highlight, especially for those who may not know, is that this Worlds was interesting in that it was a long course world that is so close to Olympic trials and to the Olympics this summer. And so it was a bit of a decision on whether or not athletes were going to travel internationally, swim at this meet with trials coming up. So maybe lead us through your thought process in deciding to go to Doha and then how you were feeling going into it. And then while everything was happening when you were there.
Yeah. So honestly, my thoughts about going to the meet or not were very up in the air for like a super long time. Just because, as you said, it's a very interesting time. I don't think they've ever had worlds, long course worlds in February before. So it was like, is this too close to the Olympic trials? Like, obviously, there's great domestic meets all year long, so I would have had great options either way. But ultimately, I trained with Kate Douglas and Jack Aikens at UVA in our little kind of pro group thing. So they both were deciding on going. And so I think knowing that, and then also knowing that I think the college team at UVA would have taken a bit different of a direction just because they were getting ready for ACCs. So I was like, it would be, I think, more fun for me and more ideal to just be with Kate and Jack and take that experience to Doha. And it actually fell at a really great time just because Todd told me that he enjoys having this kind of prep meet in mid-year because his kids do really well when they go ACCs and then NCAAs. He's kind of mastered the whole double taper situation. So he was like, actually, this would fall at a perfect time. We'll get to see how you're responding to like training at UVA. And then it's a kind of a good stopping point where if we do need to adjust, there's plenty of time before the trials where we can just shift focus or add a couple more things in, and it'll still work out well for June. So I think once we kind of went through that whole process of going through the steps and seeing if I should go or not, definitely went headfirst in, made it my focus. And then I was pretty nervous for the meet, honestly. As I kind of said before, like, this was my first big meet with Todd under his training. So kind of up in the air where it would go. We didn't really taper much. So I think we lifted the day before we left. And then kind of our taper was just being at the meet. And we didn't double while we were there, which was super nice. So a little bit of rest, not really expecting much. Todd was like, you know, goals for this meet, if you could go close to your best times, that would be great. But if you were able to go best times, like, that'd be stellar. That would exceed my expectations. So I think it went way better than I expected. And I'd say it's very encouraging. I was kind of just like in a daze the whole meet, I would say. Like, the 100 fly, I was pretty happy with the result. And then the backs just kind of hit me, and I just was almost zombie walking to the end of the meet because I was like, what's going on? I don't even know. But yeah, I mean, it was so much fun. We had kind of a smaller team than normal. It was, I think, only not that many girls. There was like maybe 5 to 10 girls, which is so unusual. Normally there's over double that. So it was a very, very fun meet. It was very surreal, but I'm really happy for the opportunity just to go and be able to represent the U.S. and do well for the U.S.
That's incredible. I always like to hear people's perspective. I know for me, when I went to a meet and popped a really great time, I at least knew I was going the paces. You can't always control the, you know, environment and the external factors, but you know, like, okay, I'm hitting pace to hit this record or get a best time. Was that the case for you going into it, or was it you were totally stunned by your performances?
I mean, I actually have been doing really well in practice leading up to the meet. So I would say it's very encouraging. I was holding faster than I used to in the past. So I was like, okay, this could end up being a really great time, but also, you know, it's February. So even if it doesn't really matter. This is not my focus meet. So I had felt pretty good in like prelims and semis and finals, just because I would say we kind of grinded from August to December. And then after US Open, just really hit the ground running. So that was like the first time I'd actually felt good in the water for a while. So I was like, this is wonderful in and of itself. And then, yeah, I mean, definitely not expected to go best times, but I was really, really happy when I did. And I think once I hit that first best time and I think the 100 back, I was like, okay, like this is awesome for backstroke. And then it just kind of kept going.
Oh, that kind of confidence is amazing to have. And there's two things you mentioned in the beginning that I think are incredible to point out. One, that you weren't tapered.
Yeah.
You still perform like this. And you also mentioned a double taper, which I wanted to explain for a second, because I think for some of our listeners that aren't as familiar with the swimming space, it is a really interesting concept. So before every major competition that we have, we do something called a taper, which is essentially you really bring down the volume and kind of amp up the intensity and do more quick hits, more race style pacing, imagination of, you know, your splits, your 50s, your 100s, whatever it is. And you essentially are just resting more leading into your competition so that you're ready to rock. And so with the double taper, that can happen in situations like this year when you have athletes that are competing at both an NC2A championships or a major competition in March and then have trials coming up just at the end of June. So you have coaches like Todd, as you say, that have gotten very good at what we call the double taper, which is tapering before two competitions that are a little bit closer together than what we as swimmers are used to. So to have that kind of confidence in yourself and in your training, but also in your coach, that is just like, I mean, has to give you so much excitement moving forward. And if you could pick out like one moment or one race from Doha that for you really stood out, what would that be and why?
I would say the most like emotion I felt after a race was probably the 50 back. I think going into that meet, I couldn't even remember the last time I'd done a 50 back, especially like racing wise, like off a start and everything. So I really just had no expectations going into it. And kind of the whole year, and when I started training with Todd, he was like, your 200 back is like probably going to be like more of our focus. There was no expectation. I was like, I was doing this for fun pretty much. And I was really happy just with how I was doing in like prelims and semis. I was like, wow, maybe I'm like a spring backstroker now. And then like, this was like finals. I was like, okay, I'm just going to go rip it and we'll see. And like, I was shocked by the result because, the Australians are obviously very, very good swimmers and they're very, very good backstrokers. So, to like be able to win gold for US, I was like, there was no way that was like on my plan for this meet, but I'm very happy with how it went. So yeah, I mean, because for the 100 and 200 backstroke, there was a bit more pressure, a bit more expectation because Reagan and Kaylee weren't going to be there. So I was like, okay, I probably should do this for the US. That would be wonderful if I could. But then for the 50 back, I was like, whatever. Like, this isn't even an Olympic event. Like, it's just fun. So I think just the feeling of touching that wall and seeing the scoreboard, it was really, really special. So I think that was probably my favorite.
Don't you wish you could always just bottle that up? Like, can I just feel the way you feel in the 50 back before the 200 back? But
yeah, if you could sell that feeling, you'd be so rich.
I agree.
It's so true.
Oh my gosh. Well, Claire, I want to go back a little bit. I want to go back to Tokyo and talk about that. For those who don't know, you made the team when you were just 16 years old. And then you turned 17 at the games. So maybe just talk to us a little bit about that experience. I mean, I know now you're essentially a veteran. You've been to world championships, you know, you've been to the Olympics. So looking back on that now, having had all these experiences, what do you look back and think about?
I mean, the whole trip, I'm sure Missy, you can relate to this, but it was a fever dream to me because I think as a kid, I would prep and like dream for so long that one day I'd make the Olympic team. And then it happened and I was really little. And then the whole time I was like, oh my God, starstruck. I think I was scrolling back through pictures the other day and that was my phase where I was obsessed with Caleb Dressel. Yeah. And there was a picture of cardboard cutout. And even Alex and Gretchen Walsh are today, they joke with me. They're like, Claire, you were so obsessed with Caleb. I was like, yes. I was so little and I was like, you are my idol and Katie Ledecky is my idol. And the whole time I was like in a lane with Katie and I was freaking out because she got in my lane for like a practice in training camp. And I was like, I had like the best practice of my life. And I was like, I gotta show up and show out for Katie.
Wait, like, does Caleb know about this? Because I'm so excited if this is breaking news. Does he know about this cutout?
Okay, embarrassingly enough, not about the cutout. That's, I think
you might need to send us this.
I'm pretty sure my coach... So I turned 17 at the training camp in Hawaii, and everyone like signs the birthday card, like as a gesture, because like you're celebrating your birthday with the team. And my coach, I think, texted Caleb or somehow like someone texted Caleb and was like, "You got to sign Claire's birthday card." And I was like, "Oh my God, please don't ever tell him that." But yes.
It's the greatest form of endearment. I'm sure yes. He appreciates it so much, but I do. Katie and I both know exactly what's that yes. like. You're just on this team and you're totally starstruck, and you have, you know, posters of these athletes on your right. walls. You've grown up watching them, and the next thing you know, you're on relays with them and representing your country with them. Yeah. And you're like trying to justify this like juxtaposed view of like, oh my gosh, they're here, but I'm here, like, yeah. and we're here together. And you kind of were like fighting for that belief, like, no, I made it here too. Mm. Like, even though I've looked up to these athletes for so many years, like, I did make my way on this team by myself, and I deserve a place to be here. And it's so special and so wild all at the same time. And it's one of, I think, the most beautiful things about our sport.
Yes.
Because I don't think there's a lot of other sports where you get elite high school athletes that are also getting to compete with the best in the world in the same sport.
100%.
And that is just such a beautiful thing. And I think it's why our sport has the legacy that it does, is because you're able to have the veterans and the role models actually engage and work and become teammates and friends with the 15, 16, 17 year olds that are on their first teams. And you just end up learning so much from them. So was there a person on that trip in particular that kind of took you under their wing and mentored you a little bit? Was it multiple people, or was it just kind of a general feeling being amongst Team USA?
I think one thing that Team USA does a really good job of is kind of creating that feeling for all the youngsters. I know on that trip in particular, the veterans and captains did a great job of like banding together and saying, okay, we know that, I think most of them have actually been there before where they're all little, and there was a pretty big cohort of teenagers and little kids on the team. So, everyone definitely made an effort to like take us under their wing and give us tips. But I think Katie probably was the best role model to me. Just, she does everything with such grace that like you can't help but want to emulate her. So just watching how she interacted with people and how she approached like a big meet like the Olympics, just like a pro, I think was probably the best learning experience for me, because I think just seeing her calm confidence is like almost helped me, because I try to do that now, because I mean, She deserves that. She's like literally the best swimmer in the whole entire world. But I'd say she was my role model.
I love that calm confidence.
Yeah. And grace.
Yes.
Like those are, if I think about Katie, those are the first words I think about when I think about how she operates and interacts with people. Yeah. I mean, we're Katie fans too. Yeah. So we get it.
Who isn't? When you came home from that meet, looking back on it, what was your thought on your performances there, your takeaways when you, I mean, at that point, again, just 17 years old, did you kind of walk away with a little bit more of a fire under your belly, even though you had just accomplished a dream you'd had your whole life? Did it kind of leave you wanting more, as in, I want to do this again, I want to make another Olympic team?
Definitely. I'm someone who's always kind of striving for more. So in the moment, I think after, so I competed 100 fly individually and then on a relay, and I had gotten 10th individually. And as like a kid, I was kind of used to like at my age group meets or other meets, like always making that A final. So it left me a little bit sad, because I was like, oh, I didn't make the A final. And that was like a big goal of mine. So, definitely leaving me striving, and just kind of knowing that feeling and knowing that I have the experience now, I think that'll definitely help me, hopefully, going forward.
Oh, 100%. And we both know what that is like very much as well. And you did that. You came back. Your Worlds in 2022 was incredible. And we actually want to fast forward a little bit too, because something that we love to focus and talk about a lot here on Unfiltered Waters is the hard moments and kind of the grittiness, and the successful moments are amazing. And as we just talked about Doha, they're so fun. And I remember just living off of seeing every picture of you from that meet, because your smile was just like so contagious, and we love to see it, but we also love to hear about, you know, what has gone on behind that smile too. And going into 2023, Nationals was the trials meet for that year's World Championships, and you got very, very sick. Yes. Right before Nationals. You were hospitalized, you were on IV fluids, and you still made the decision to go and compete at Nationals, which is, I mean, to compete that many events at a meet when you're feeling 100% is so much on your body. But I really want our listeners to understand how mentally tough you had to be to still go to that meet and try. And even though you didn't make the team, you performed so well, not even for being sick. You just performed well, let alone what you had just been through in the weeks before. So maybe take us back through that a little bit. Your emotions when you found out you were that sick, having to stop, get treatment for it, your decision to still go and compete at Nationals, and just kind of what you learned through struggling through and persevering through that time.
Yeah. So kind of the timeline. So I was at Stanford when I kind of started to feel ill. And then all of a sudden it just kind of hit me one day. And I was like, I called Greg in the morning. I was like, Greg, I can't go to practice. Like, I feel so terrible. And so it kind of escalated from there. And then eventually, like, my parents got involved, and both of my parents are doctors, and my mom's an ER doctor. So she's dealt with all this stuff before. This is kind of her thing. So she was like, okay, Claire, like, you got to come home. Like, you just got to come home. Like, we can take care of you better. You'll be in your own bed. Like, everything will work out. Okay. And so I think at that point it was like maybe a week before the meet, and I went home. I think I had been out of the water for many days. I like tried to get back in, and I maybe did 2000 and got out. And I was like, oh gosh, it's just an extended taper, I guess. And then at some point at home, my mom was like, Claire, I really just don't think you should go to this meet. Like, you're not in the water. You're feeling terrible. Like, you should just like protect your body, protect your peace, like just stay home, and we'll try again next year. And I was like, you know, and I think when she told me that is when I realized that I actually did really want to go, because it's almost like when someone takes something away from you, you realize how much you want it. So I was like, you know what, like, let's just see how tomorrow goes. I'm already starting to feel better, mom. Like, I just want to try, like, just let me go and I'll just try. So I did end up going, and the 100 free, the first day of the meet was so rough. Like, I think I went like 2 or 3 or maybe even 4 seconds slower than my best time. And I think that was a big shock for me, because I was like, okay, maybe this did hit me harder than I thought. But actually, I utilized my sports psych a lot at that time, because I was like, you know, if I come to this meet, like, I made the decision to come, like, if I just did that in 100 free, like, what should be my focus? I was a little lost, like, did it make finals? And I was like, okay, I got to refocus, recenter, like, what is my goal? And so I think we discussed a lot about just being brave and like having courage and knowing that you may fail, but still trying it anyways. And I think I grew a lot in that area, because in pretty much every final I went into after that, I was like, I know this is going to hurt. I know there's an opportunity for me to not make the team, but I'm going to try anyways, and I'm going to try my best. So the nice part is I don't think a 200 back will ever be that painful again.
Silver lining.
Thank goodness. I still even went, I think, a best time in the 200 backstroke. So I was like, you know, it's okay that I didn't achieve getting top two. I think a lot of the girls at that meet had an incredible races. So this just kind of wasn't my time, and that's okay. And I'll just, you know, enjoy home during the summer. It's the summer after my freshman year. Like, really just take time, spend time with family, like, be at home, reset. And then Honestly, it was nice because it gave me the opportunity to reflect on what I wanted for the year leading up to the Olympics, and knowing that I did want to be a bit closer to home, closer to get some medical treatment if I needed it, just because of that harrowing experience. So I think looking back now, it is definitely a positive thing for me that I learned all that and went through all that, because now I think I'm so much tougher. Like, even in Doha, I was telling myself in the ready room, like, you know, if I can go and do that, knowing that I didn't have the best training and I didn't feel very great, but I still went and tried it, like, it's going to be so much easier here. And like, I'm so capable of it. So I think it was a tough meet for sure, but it was so great that the U.S. was able to qualify all the relays, and it was so fun watching the Americans. But I definitely think it was a great learning opportunity for me. Mm-hmm.
I know, I always say, like, it's so nice to be able to, but it's amazing to be able to get not a failure, but a hard moment or a curveball out of the way earlier in your career. Like, mine was 15 at my first Olympics, but it kind of is like ripping the Band-Aid, right? Because then you're like, you show yourself, you prove to yourself, okay, I have the tools. This was really hard, but you got through it, right? You worked with your mom, you worked with your sports psych, and you showed yourself that now, if that happens again in your career, which sadly, right, there'll be things that come up, but you'll have that confidence. So I always say to our listeners, to anyone who asks, having a failure is almost a positive thing, like the way that you're speaking about it, because you've just proved to yourself that you're good to go. You'll fight through it, you'll get through it. And so it kind of takes the pressure off for the future.
Yeah. I think it was also really important for me too to have that failure, just to know that it's okay to fail. I think before, like, I was so young making the team, and I'd made the world's teams after that. So it's like, I need to know that I'm human too, and that these things do happen, but it's not the end of the world. You accept it and then you move on, because there are other meets, there are other Olympics, and just knowing that life doesn't boil down to that one moment, I think is really important.
It's so true. And I love that too, of that life goes on. And I actually ironically think that I also said this in Caleb's episode. I'm such a firm believer that we go through the things we go through in life to A, then help other people go through them. But also, I think our greatest moments of trial and hardship, they show us what we're capable of. Like, we wouldn't realize what we are capable of getting through if we didn't have those moments to test us and to test our strength. And I talk about that as a mom all the time, is like, my confidence in myself as a mom has grown so much over 2.5 years, because I have gotten through every hard moment that has come, right? Like, and there are going to be so many more, and there have been so many in the past, but it's like, you get through your first sleepless night, you get through your first ER visit, you get through the first really bad sickness, and like, you just keep getting through stuff. And all that does is just build your confidence in who you are as, in that case, a mom, but as an athlete, and who you are as an athlete and what you can bring to the table, even when the circumstances aren't perfect. Because I think that's another thing about our sport that's really tough, is we are an Olympic sport. So of course we have those big meets once a year, but ultimately our bread and butter is every 4 years. And we don't have control of that timeline. We don't have control over whether or not we get sick going into an Olympic trials or an Olympic games. Like, those are the dates set, and we have to control whatever it is that we can to be at our best. But having that confidence and knowing you've been through it and you've been able to still show up and fight, even when you were feeling that low after being so sick, is amazing. And again, to still go best times.
That's seriously incredible. Incredible.
It's so wild. And now, as you look towards this summer, I know we just got back from Doha. We have Olympic trials coming up, which, by the way, we will be there. So we cannot wait to see you and cheer for you in person. But what are you thinking about? Because I think one thing that is so impressive about you, Claire, is how diverse you are as an athlete. You are a freestyler, a backstroker, a butterflyer of all distances. I mean, you do so much. So when it comes to preparing for Olympic trials, for hopefully the Olympics, how are you approaching your training, the schedule of the meet? Kind of what's your focus as you look down the line as what's to come this summer? Hey everyone, we just wanted to give a super special shout out to our amazing production staff over at Cannonball Media. We have an amazing team behind this podcast, and we couldn't do it without them. So thank you so much for all of your help.
If you're looking to start your own podcast, they take care of everything from A to Z. So reach out to cannonballmedia.co.
Sleep is the foundation to performance and longevity. It is either enhancing your performance or holding you back from your highest potential. Dream Recovery is committed to just that, helping people sleep as well as possible so they can conquer the day. Dream Recovery believes in the power of evidence-based solutions to optimize sleep and recovery.
Yes, and everyone deserves to feel their best, and that starts with a great night's sleep. So many of our own Unfiltered Waters guests use Dream Recovery's sleep mask and mouth tape, including Carson Foster and Michael Andrew, and they swear by how much it has helped their sleep and performance in the pool. Visit dreamrecovery.io to have your best sleep ever. Use code UNFILTERED for 30% off your entire order and 50% off your first month of Dream Tape. Sweet dreams.
Yeah, so actually Todd had to have this conversation with me the other day. Both me and Tate Douglas are in a very similar situation where we can swim a lot, but we almost need to focus more on our best chances to make the team. So for me, he was like, you know, maybe you should consider the possibility of maybe not doing the 100 free. But then also, like, I enjoy that event so much. And so I obviously wouldn't want to give it up. So I think that's still something that we're discussing. But I definitely benefit because the meet is 9 days long this year. So that extra day, I think, actually lines my schedule up pretty nicely. But honestly, I was really, really pleased with my performances in Doha. And I think Todd was too. So I think he's doing some stuff behind the scenes to tweak my training, but he hasn't clued me in. So I'm just working hard.
Just following.
I think whatever he's concocted will end up well at when we get to the Olympic trials.
Yeah. Can you talk about that? Because I think for people listening who maybe aren't as familiar with swimming, 9 days for a meet is not typical other than at World Championships, the Olympics, and Olympic trials. Otherwise, it's usually 3 to 5 days. So when you're thinking about your schedule, I know you and I felt the same. It's a marathon. Like, right, you're coming into day one in prelims and you're like, this is almost closer to 2 weeks than it is a week. Like, we're getting, it's such a long stretch. Mm-hmm. So on the mental side, obviously physically you have that in the bank, you're taking care of that, you're super fit, but how are you thinking about approaching it mentally when you have so many swims, prelims, semifinals, finals going into a 9-day meet like this?
I actually consider that one of my strengths. I kind of, after the Olympics, for that 2022 Worlds in Budapest, I did really well at trials and had like a giant, event load. I think I had 4 individual events or just some crazy amount for that time of the year. So just doing that meet and then short course Worlds, you also kind of have a bigger event load. And then even at Doha, this past February, just many, many events. So, I almost like it better because I like to be busy. And honestly, because I do 3 different strokes, I think it keeps it interesting for me because, I could have Hunter fly on day 1 and 2, and then I get to have backstroke and then maybe freestyle. And so I think what I've learned is you can only just take it 1 day at a time and 1 race at a time. And what's nice is that you have prelims, semis, and then finals in those meet formats. So, prelims, like, you don't have to kill yourself. You just kind of have to advance, and then semis, you get a little better. And then finals is obviously you want to swim your best. So knowing that too, I think is helpful because, I mean, you can't win from prelims, you can only win from finals. So, just making sure you're moving through the race as well and changing the races up, I think, just keeps it interesting for me. And I don't know, I like being busy, so I like it better that we have those big event loads.
Kind of takes the pressure off because there's a million different chances of some fast.
Yes.
That reminds me of Barcelona Worlds in 2013. I'm going to call out my parents. I had a ridiculous personal and relay event load while I was there. And my parents, bless their hearts, they never missed a session. So they were jokingly giving me a hard time when they came back because they were like, yeah, all the other parents actually got to see Barcelona. they were like, and they'd be asking us what we were doing that day, and we were going back to the pool. Oh, mom and dad, I'm so sorry.
I know. I feel like there needs to be a little support group for all the multi-event athletes, the parents.
Yeah.
Because they're just like same for Beijing. My parents were just commuting to the pool, coming back to the pool, commuting to the pool. Same. So it's like they need a little like group together so that they can at least enjoy company while they're doing all the commuting.
Exactly. And I know that, okay, 400 IM was your baby. 200 back was mine. Do you have an event? I know you mentioned that you love Hunter Free, but is there an event to you that you're like, oh gosh, this is mine. Like, this is my baby.
I would say historically, Hunter Fly, just because it's what broke me out onto the scene. But lately I have been loving the 200 backstroke, and I'll argue with my friends because they're like, oh no, like 200 backstroke is like the worst 200. But I'm like, in a kind of a weird way, I enjoy it. Like, I kind of like the pain at the end. I don't know, but it's kind of like a different event, and it's 2 minutes of fun. This is, normally I'm in there only for a little bit, so I got to make it worth my parents' while.
No, I totally, I mean, of course I understand it, but there's something about like getting into a rhythm in the 200 back that you can't do in the 100 or the 50, because the 100 and the 50 are just such pure sprints that when it comes to the 200, you're constantly pushing, but you can almost settle into your stroke in a way that you can't do, or that I couldn't do in the 50 or 100, that made me love it so much. Like, definitely thought it was the most painful of the three, but there are those sweet moments in there where you just feel like so calm and confident, throwing it back to Katie, of just like so good and loving that feeling. And were there moments like that in the 4 a.m. or were there?
I'm just sitting here, I'm just going to keep my mouth shut because I don't know what you guys are talking about. Like a rhythm.
She's like, I was just surviving.
I'm just like, I am in pain. No, I mean, I will say, I think freestyle, like 400 free, I would say is probably similar. You get into a rhythm, you have that easy speed. You're like, yes, I'm hitting this. So I understand on that level. I never got into what you guys are talking about in a 200 back. Ever, but yeah. Great for you guys. But I understand on some level what you're talking about.
we can separate and talk about the two back later. But I'm so happy to hear that you're loving training so much, and Todd at Virginia. And that was something we wanted to touch about too, because we know that it's always a really big decision to change teams. And you had an amazing season at Stanford, and we know that Greg is an incredible coach that we all love. And it was a big decision for you to decide to go to Virginia. So if you wouldn't mind walking us through that decision, and you've definitely spoken about it, but how it's going so far. I mean, you are surrounded by just an unbelievable training group there in Virginia, of course, an amazing coaching staff, and what that transition has been like for you.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely was the hardest decision of my life. I think I can easily say that. And I think I can probably stand with that for a while, just because my experience at Stanford was amazing. It was just a great freshman year. I loved Greg. I loved the team. And outdoor swimming, I'd never done it before, so it was very, very fun. A little cold in the winter sometimes, but there was nothing better in the summer when you could just bike to the pool and it was like beautiful outside and you were training. And honestly, I'm still like getting benefits from it, because in Doha, like the ceiling was a bit crooked, but I was like, I can swim outdoors. I can swim anywhere. So it's still helping me to this day. But yeah, I think the biggest thing for me, I'm definitely a homebody. So I think having that accessibility of being able to drive home was a big factor in the decision, and being close to, you know, medical support if I needed it. But I was nervous for the transition, and I was proven wrong, because it was so great. The team was really, really welcoming. And I had pretty high expectations because I loved all of my teammates at Stanford, but, everyone welcomes me with open arms here, which I'm very grateful for. And it's been great. I've gotten to train with pretty much everyone. I've kind of bounced around groups, which has been fun. So I get a little of everything. Sometimes I'm in that 4 a.m. group, which I'm always asking myself, why am I here? But apparently it's good for me. So but yeah, it's been great.
And are you living solo, or are you living with a group of girls?
I kind of came over at a weird time, so all of the rooms were occupied, unfortunately. But I'm riding solo, but I actually love it. I enjoy living alone. I need my little me time at night, so
Yeah. I feel like you and I are very similar. I'm getting a lot of like homebody, check.
Yeah.
Needs me time, check.
Turn her back rhythm, check. Meanwhile, I'm like, no, I need people.
It is very fun. I do kind of get FOMO sometimes when I see them all together in the apartments, but I have a very specific bedtime routine that I need to follow. So that's unnegotiable for me.
Yes, I've heard about this. Tell us more about this bedtime routine that you have.
Oh, now it's like gotten even more specific, actually, that I'm living alone. Maybe I should go get some roommates, but...
Missy's going to be like, I do all of these things.
Yeah, I'm like, oh no, yeah, done.
Well, now I've actually gotten to a really good rhythm of like recovery. It's become a priority of mine this year, so... I'll actually eat dinner while in my Nervotex, which is great.
Love that.
It's wonderful. I'll watch shows. I've been big into shows lately because I don't have anyone to talk to at meals. So I'll watch a show. And then I go to bed just super, super early because I need a lot of sleep at night. And surprisingly, I don't nap. So my sleep at night is so important. So I'll literally start getting ready for bed at like 8:45 and then be in bed by like 9:15 and then go to sleep. So
yeah, we're the same person.
Yeah. I know that if I need to text Missy for something and it's 9:20, I'm like, missed the window.
It's gone. It's like if there's a text that comes to me after 8 p.m., you're going to get a reply before 5 a.m. the next 100%, morning. 100%.
That's not me. I don't do that. I'm a pansy with morning practice. It's terrible.
Hey, but you're getting your sleep the night before. No. What shows have you been into lately while you're normatecking and eating dinner?
So I really like kind of like mind thrillers, like murder mysteries. So my age group coach, Rob, recommended Death and Other Details. And then right now I'm watching Only Murders in the Building, which are both like murder mystery. I don't know. It kind of like, it's exciting. I like the plot. But I had been watching Criminal Minds before that. I hadn't watched it before. And that was not a very good bedtime show because
living alone.
I need to like make sure all the doors are locked and my window's down and I would get scared. So I needed to transition off of that.
That's a good call. I'm the biggest baby when it comes to any kind of scary movie. Like you joked because her dog, Allie, she has a Frenchie. Yeah. And I walked in the house and she had a blanket over her head and she looked like E.T. I still haven't watched E.T.
What?
Because E.T. is
not scary.
It's a classic.
I didn't watch Pirates of the Caribbean until I was like 17 years old.
I didn't either. My dad finally forced me to watch it.
I was so scared. So literally,
watch the second or third one.
Okay, definitely the third one is the best in my opinion. Definitely watch but when I have this image of like being alone in an apartment watching murder mysteries, like my heart rate is immediately like my palms are sweating.
Oh my god, I basically like triggered you when I was like, oh my gosh, she looks like E.T.
Yeah, I've been anxious for like the past 2 hours.
Oh my god, that's so funny. Oh my gosh,
it's so fun hearing that you still like have these things. I mean, you're still 19 years old now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 19 years old. I mean, you're still a teenager. And how far away are you from family? You said your driving distance.
It's quick. I actually just came back up this weekend. I was home for a little bit.
Perfect.
Awesome. It's like 3 hours and 15 minutes.
Okay.
Maybe amazing. If you speed, you can go a little faster.
We don't do that.
I try to not get tickets.
So you get to see your family a lot, which I know is so important to you. What else does Claire like to do that keeps you 19? What are the things that you do for yourself that really kind of ground you?
That's a tough question because I would say a lot of my time lately has been at the pool. But and this will make me sound like a complete nerd, but I really, really enjoy reading. So I buckle down and get through a couple books. I've been expanding my genre. I'm not only reading fantasy anymore. I'm reading How to Win Friends and Influence People.
That's a good one.
Recommended it, so I was like, okay, I should read it. And it's actually been a really, really good book. I would recommend it to anyone who's interested. But definitely reading, watching shows now. I'm expanding, and then lately I've been taking care of plants to fill my apartment.
That's hard.
It's been stressful because I wouldn't consider myself to having a green thumb, but I've been keeping them alive, and I think that's pretty impressive. I've never kept a plant alive before. It's been with me since August. Wow. So
that's legit.
Well, especially when you travel too.
No, I feel like I that makes it so hard. I had to devise methods to keep watering them. I had to give them to a friend from when I was in Doha because I was going to be gone for like a month. So I had to get creative for sure.
Do you have, I mean, there's different, I've learned, variants of plants. Like a snake plant is the least high maintenance plant out there. It's like you throw some water his way and he's good. You should get that one. What type of plants do you have?
I have no idea. I'm going to be honest with you. I have no idea. My dad got them for me when I first moved into the apartment. Cause he's like, your apartment's a little bare and depressing. So let me get you plants. I thought they were going to be fake plants just to like fill some space, get some greenery in there. And they turned out they were real. And I was like, Dad, I can't take care of these. Like I've never kept a plant alive before. Even a cactus when I was younger, like I can't keep them alive. So then it almost became a challenge for like how long, cause they made it through the first month and started to turn a little brown. And I was like, oh no. So I pickled in and they're alive now. So I got to keep going until they eventually die. But I have no idea what they are. All I know is that when they start to droop a little bit, I'll put some water in. They were looking a little rough when I got back, so I tried some coffee grounds. I heard that's good for them. But I've yet to see results from that, so I'll keep you up.
Jury's still out. That's so fun, though. All those things are so important to have. And I can tell, though, that you know, swimming is a huge part of who you are, and you do seem to be really, really enjoying it, which is so special. And I know that you mentioned, especially when you go back to times like when you got sick before nationals in 2023, kind of using your sports psych to help you with that. Has that been something that you've always prioritized, or kind of as you've climbed in your career, something that you've realized is really important to you that you've wanted to prioritize?
Yeah, so mental health has always been a big thing in my family. Like my mom, my parents' biggest supporters of mental health ever. So after Tokyo, it's definitely a hard letdown after such big a meet and all the emotions you experience just making the team and then being on the trip. It's the best thing ever. And then you come back and it's real life and you're like, okay, what now? So I started utilizing a sports psych then, and I love it. So I'll like look forward to my meetings now. I'll be like, Mom, guess what? I get to sport this week. And she's like, oh my God. I'm like, oh, I can't wait. I'll like make checklists in my head. I want to talk about this, this, and this.
Oh yes.
See, too, I think I passed like all of my major decisions through him. Like I am codependent now. But it's so helpful because you get to a point in sport, at least for me, where I start to overthink. That's my downfall. But it's so important because it's a very unique experience. And it is very helpful to talk to people that have been through it. But everyone handles things differently. So just having that feedback from them and being able to work on just different aspects of myself has been so helpful. And not even in swimming, but in real life, too. And I cannot say enough good things about it, but I think everyone should have a sports psych or a therapist because I love them.
We are big fans for that. You nailed that though, because it is true. People are like, well, I have my friends or I have my parents, but just like having that unbiased third party where they're not involved at all, I think is so key. Like that's what helps me the most is just they don't have any stake in this. They don't have any opinion. They're not saying, oh, here's how I did this, right? It's just for you and only you in that moment. And that's the best part about it.
And thank you for speaking about it with so much joy. Like, can we recognize that? Like, I feel like a lot of times people feel like either things have to be really hard or tough and they like hit rock bottom and then they have to go see one. But to hear you speak about it and be like, no, like this is something I genuinely look forward to every week. Like I feel the same. I had to cancel my session with my therapist last week because we were on vacation and I was devastated. I like literally texted her yesterday and I was like, do you have time this week? Like, can you fit me in? Like, I miss you. And so I approach it with that kind of lightness, and know that this is a person that is just always there for you, that you can bounce ideas off of. And I think we definitely need more of that in the space, more joy around topics that are serious and real, but that we can also bring light to, especially when we share our experiences together.
Yeah. And speaking of lightness, Claire, I wanted to end our podcast. We still got some time, but just some more fun rapid fire questions. So are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. So the first question, so for those of you who don't know, you came back from Doha, you crushed it, and you won quite a bit of a purse. I won't say exactly the amount if you don't want me to, but for me, it was always a tradition. If I went to a meet and I got a lot of prize money, I was always able to go and purchase something that was just could be frivolous or just fun or something I was looking at. And it was always a purse for me, ironically. Have you purchased anything, or is that something that you enjoy doing when you come back from a meet like this?
So I have. So it's actually funny. This is like a first time thing for me, but now I'm addicted. I've already got like my next couple planned out. Don't forget. So before I was like, I don't know. I just didn't really care that much about like materialistic things. I was like, I love shopping at like Target or whatever. But the older I got, like the more I got around like girls that are in college now, and you know, things get more important to a college girl. And so I noticed that everyone had these really nice like purses and like going out bags and like closets. So I was like, okay, like I guess if I want some money, like it'd be fun to treat myself. I've never had like gotten a big purchase before aside from like $100 at Walmart or whatever. So I was like, okay, I'm gonna make it a goal that if I achieve something, that I'm gonna treat myself with a purse. And so I got some spending money. I was like, okay, I'm gonna treat myself. So my dad was with me on the trip because he loves swim meets. So we like travel the world together. It's our thing. And so he's the spender of the family. He's a big spender. So we went shopping, and Doha is wonderful because they have these beautiful malls. And one mall that we went to, the Vendo Mall, has all of the designer stores that you can possibly imagine, all in like one corner. So we went shopping. First we went on day 8 of the meet because I didn't have anything to do. So we went and we were going to go scout. We were just going to go look and see what they had to offer. I kind of had an idea of what I wanted, but I was like, I'm not sure. I want to see. So we went to all the designer stores and we were shopping around and we went, got to Prada. And Kate Douglas had actually brought a Prada bag with her, and I saw it. And I liked the shape. It was like this little like shoulder bag. And I was like, you know, I kind of like that shape, I guess. And so I went to Prada and we were looking at it, and I found this white one that was a very similar shape. And I was like, you know what? Like, that's a really cute purse. Like, I want that one. And then my dad was like, okay, let's buy it. And I was like, oh, like right now? And he was like, yes, right now. So we pulled the trigger on that purse. And it was very shocking, but it was so fun. And then I was kind of addicted. So the next day, it was like our designated shopping day. So then we went to Nike, and I got this. So Todd is a really big shoe fan, so he's gotten me into shoes. And so I went and I got some Low Dunks, which is like the new thing.
Oh yeah.
So I got two pairs of those because obviously one would not commit.
Yeah, obviously.
That was like, just get both. And I was like, okay. So
when can we go shopping with your dad? This enabling I am here for.
And then, my dad was like, well, you got a purse. You kind of need a wallet to go with it. So then we went shopping for a wallet, and I ended up getting a Gucci wallet, and I was like, oh my god, this is the most money I've ever spent. Like, I still kind of have anxiety about it because I was like, that's so much money. But I already have my bag picked out if I make the Olympic team.
Oh, no, yes.
Claire, I did that exact same thing in 08. Went like at training camp at the Olympics. I already knew there was this special Louis Vuitton that I was going to go get, and went there like day 2 of training camp.
Yes.
So you earned it. You deserve it. That's amazing.
Okay, we are going to need pictures of the Prada bag and the Louis Vuitton bag.
And the Gucci wallet.
And the Gucci wallet. But that's it's true though. Having those little things, yeah, like it's really special. And then every time you look at that purse, that is going to bring you back to that time, yeah, and that performance, which is it's so, so special. Oh, I love that so much. Okay, one more rapid fire. The most embarrassing moment you've had thus far, other than the cardboard cutout of Caleb Dressel on the national team.
Just own that though. Like, that's me. I mean,
I love it.
Can send it to you guys.
Please send it.
I was in my camera roll the other day and I was like, oh my God. I remember that exact moment. My coach took the picture. He was like, oh my God, Claire, it's Caleb. Go take a picture. And I was like, oh my God, yes, sure. So it was at Olympic Trials too, which is even worse. But
that's amazing.
What would I say? That, gosh, it's hard to think off the top of my head.
I know.
I definitely did something really embarrassing at training camp. I was a freak because I was so starstruck. I almost had to prepare for this.
What about weird, making it different, like the craziest thing that happened at training camp for you?
For me.
Yeah. Or anyone else. You could throw someone under the bus.
Oh, I don't think I'd do that to them.
Okay.
Actually, gosh, I'm flat. I can't perform for you guys. What the hell? I can't think of anything.
You are fine. We can always go to...
I swear to God, there's going to be some... I'll probably text it to you if I remember.
I know.
But I'll be thinking about it all of practice tonight. I'll be...
You'll be like in the middle of the set, like, oh, that was it.
Found it.
I'll just text it to you guys.
That's perfect. We can go. We will go to our final three questions, which we do at the end of every episode. And these ones are still hard, but hopefully a little bit less so. So the first one is, what is a moment within the sport of swimming that has brought you the most amount of joy?
I'd say whenever, like, I meet younger kids of swimming and they're like, mm-hmm, like, oh my goodness, like, I watched you on TV, or like, they like want your autograph. And it's just very surreal because I remember when I was doing that. And so to think that like I am inspiring, or I am the idol for some kids that are coming up through the ranks, is really, really cool and very full circle for me.
Yeah.
It's
beautiful.
All right. What's a moment outside the sport of swimming that's brought you the most amount of joy?
I love family time. So when swimming doesn't get in the way, we always go on very fun family vacations. And so I think I really, really enjoy those.
Is there one family vacation in particular that stands out?
We went to Mont Tremblant, Canada, skiing one time. Cause I love skiing and it was so fun. It was a very like surreal town. Because we got in pretty late at night from the airport, and it's like a 2-hour drive or something to the resort or whatever that we went to. And my mom didn't pay the upgrade for like directions in the car. So I'm pretty sure she was just using like her phone or like a map. And we kind of got into like the back country. So we didn't really know where we were going. And we eventually stopped at the subway or something because we couldn't find the hotel, and everyone there spoke French, and it was a miracle we got there. But once we were in the resort and we were safe, it was lovely, and it was kind of like wintry, and there was Christmas decorations, and then we went to my cousin's wedding after in New York. So it was just a very fun trip all in all, and a lot of fun memories.
Oh, that sounds perfect. Oh, Canada at Christmas time. Just love it.
Yeah.
All right. Final question of the day. If you had to pick one word to encompass something that you're working on, something you're striving for, or just something that you're trying to really put your perspective and intention into moving forward, what would that word be and why?
This is honestly the easiest question of the day. I just talked about this with my sports psych. But I would say confidence, because I would say my default strategy when I do get to meets is putting people on a pedestal, like I do with Caleb and Katie and many other people. So just realizing that the work that I put in day in, day out will get me to a spot where I can be confident and know that I'm going to do really well, I think is the goal. So I think it's something I'm always going to have to work on, and that's good because I would rather be humble than be overly confident. So just making sure I'm confident is definitely good.
That's beautiful. Well, Claire, thank you so much for taking the time. We know you're busy. We know you're training, juggling a lot. So we appreciate it. And we are so excited to see you at trials.
Thank you. Thank you guys for having me on.
Of course. Thanks, love. We'll see you soon. Perfect. Honey, thank you so much. That was so much fun.
So much fun.
All right. Well, I'm trying to think. Oh, the other thing we do need actually is I'll DM you on Instagram my number, and then we need your address because we'll send you a little something ahead of next week as well. Okay,
thank
so we'll
you.
Get your address from you, and anything else you need. But thank you so much. Please tell everyone we say hello, and we cannot wait to give you big hugs in a couple months in Indy.
Thank you, Missy. I'll have to send you. There's a picture of me. You came to a swim camp at TAC.
I totally remember when I. Yep.
Yep. And I have a picture with
the
medal on with you.
We need that picture, we need the cardboard cutout, and we need the purse and the wallet.
Thank you so much for listening and watching Unfiltered Waters. We are so grateful for your support. If you could please hit that subscribe button on any of the channels that you're watching, and maybe even give us a rating or review, we would appreciate it so much. Thank you again, and we'll talk to you soon.